This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Hi, Jason Gibbs, Joy Production Manager. It's Radiothon time. We still need Joy and we need your support. If you appreciate our free podcast service, our voice for the LGBTI community globally, and the volunteers that make our service possible, please sign up, renew your Joy membership, or make a tax-deductible donation before June 30 to keep our service possible. You may win a prize. Head to joy.org.au and click on either the Become a Member or Donate tabs to support us. If you appreciate our podcast service, let us know in the comments section when making your donation. Joy Podcasts, where you want them, when you want them, at joy.org.au and on iTunes. Here's another Saturday Magazine podcast brought to you by Joy sponsor, Virgin Australia. Visit virginaustralia.com.
Across Melbourne on Joy 94.9 and streaming online at joy.org.au, you're listening to Saturday Magazine, every Saturday, 10 till 12.
Now, Dean Beck, he spoke exclusively with the Victorian governor earlier this week, and the governor came to Joy, and this is in, so he did. We did pre-record it. This is the first place you're going to hear it. The governor came to Joy, so it's a fantastic initiative for her to come here. Second or third visit, I think, to Joy. But Dean Beck sat down with her, and as I said, I think you'll find this really, really interesting. Here's the first half.
Well, it's nearly 2 years since the 29th Governor of Victoria was appointed, former Justice of the Family Court, Magistrate, Eminent Jurist and AFL Commissioner. It's my great pleasure to welcome to Joy 94.9 and to Saturday Magazine, the Governor of Victoria, Linda Desso.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
Your role as Governor, I don't know whether there is anyone more qualified to be the Governor of Victoria. You have such a legal background. What sort of legal things are involved with the role of Governor in 2017?
Well, let me start by saying I'm sure there are other very, very well qualified people, but thank you for the compliment. Look, the constitutional part of the role certainly has a lot of legal aspects to it. But having said that, there's no reason why you must be a lawyer to perform that role well. It's an important role and it is a check and balance in our constitutional system, but we've had many fine governors who are not lawyers.
Yes, we have. We've had sporting people and all sorts of backgrounds. Your role in law, though, was one that really you didn't want to take on board. It wasn't your first choice, was it?
Well, I was very, very young when I finished school. I was the youngest of four children. I think my parents just wanted me out of the house early and I started school very early. You've done your research very well, and it is true. I was 16 when I was starting university. I wanted to do social work and I was too young to be accepted. I talked my way into law, probably meant that law was the right profession for me if I was able to talk my way in. But you can see that I practiced in the areas that so overlapped with social work. It's not really a surprise that that's how I approach my legal career.
My father is a magistrate and he hated doing family law. And yet that's what you really sort of specialised in.
I can't imagine any more important work.
Yeah.
No one will ever convince me that any contract or any other dispute could be as important as deciding the future of young people.
It's the pretty messy end of the law, though.
It can be the messy end of the law, and I always approached it on the basis that I would try to do as little harm as possible, as opposed to fooling myself that I could make everything right in people's lives when they're at such a difficult time. But provided I just abided by that view that I would try not to make things worse, I always found it very, very gratifying.
The legal profession is an interesting one. You took on board the role of teach the teacher in a judicial sense. You were tutoring judges to be judges. Tell me about that role.
Well, the interesting thing about that role is that when we started teaching judges, it was quite controversial amongst the judges themselves because judges had never had any ongoing professional training.
Right.
And this was in the 1990s. And I'm astonished by how quickly everything changed because, of course, now judges are really keen for the ongoing education that they're offered. Every judge in Australia goes to what we love to call baby judges school, which was where I taught. And they seem to just soak up the opportunity to be learning the craft from the other side of the courtroom. Because no matter how much you've appeared as a barrister or as counsel in court, the skills that you need as a judge are different.
Very different. What happened beforehand? I mean, who taught judges how to be judges? Well, Did they learn by osmosis or something?
They weren't without skills because these were people very experienced in the courtroom, but it's just a matter of evolution and progress that we know that there are better ways and more ways that you can learn, so you add more tools to the armoury that you've actually developed as a barrister.
It's a big learning curve, though, too, to do it through that technological period where computers became at your desk. And, you know, those sorts of things, you no longer had people doing your typing for you. That type of stuff was a big learning curve for my father. I can imagine for the rest of the judiciary, it would have been huge.
You're absolutely right. So there's some of the skills, you know, the most pragmatic or practical skills and advice could be imparted in the course of the courses that we were running. Mm. But also some court craft skills, judgment writing skills. I think that we all understand in modern times that judgments need to be comprehensible, that people need to understand why a certain decision was made, so we need to write clearly.
I think some of the judiciary still struggle with that, but nonetheless, what training did you have to go through to become governor?
There's no training. So from the 1st of July 2015, I was thrown in. I was very lucky that the former governor, my immediate predecessor, Alex Chernov, was very kind and very helpful and gave me a lot of time and a lot of hints. And then it's learning on the job. But a lot of it's not difficult to learn. It's meeting wonderful, wonderful people in the community, and no one has to teach you to enjoy that aspect of the role.
I think as a social worker, that's sort of top of the tree too, the role of governor. It's very much that work.
I like people. I love people. My husband does too. So as a team, we are very enthusiastic and very grateful for this opportunity.
You said you hope that one day it won't be such an important thing that someone like yourself be the first. What do you mean by that?
I think I've said that in every role in which I've been the first or one of the first. It's always an honour to be the first into any role. But the hope has to be, as we ensure that we expand our concepts of worthiness and women as well as men are open for every role, we should be celebrating the fact that it's not even a matter of comment anymore. And I feel very strongly about that. I hope that there'll be the third, fourth, 20th female governor of Victoria and no one will even think about it.
What does an average day look like for you?
There is no average day, is the first part of the answer, but it's a combination of things. There's sometimes certainly spent meeting within Government House to talk about all the events that we're holding and to plan them. There's a good bit of time spent at a computer writing speeches, so that's not the glamorous side, although for me it's a side that I particularly relish. And then there are events within the House, either very big ones in the ballroom, as you saw recently with the Ida Hobbit reception, or it might be a small group coming in for a reception to celebrate a 10th or 50th anniversary of an organisation. It can be going out. This morning we've been out opening the most beautiful sensory garden for mothers and babies at the Queen Elizabeth Centre in Noble Park. I might be on a regional trip. I might occasionally be on an international trip on behalf of the state on an official visit. I might be welcoming an ambassador. How long do you want me to go on?
It is so varied, but with your patronage of over 160 community organisations, how do you allocate a little bit of your time to each of them when everybody else wants a piece of you?
We're constantly juggling and just trying to prioritise. And my husband and I are keen to reach as many Victorians as we can and to make as many Victorians as possible feel welcome at Government House. And so we just keep trying to ensure that we are as diverse in our approach as we can possibly be.
We're speaking with the Governor of Victoria, Linda Desso, on Saturday Magazine. You did have this wonderful reception, which I was so honoured to be at, for the LGBTI community in recognition of Ida Hobbit Day. What did being the first vice-regal appointment to welcome the LGBTI community to Government House, what did that mean for you personally?
Well, it meant a great deal because of my firm commitment that we are the governor for all, I'm the governor for all Victorians, and that ours is the house for all Victorians, and that we want harmony in our community. We want equality, fairness, and diversity. So that event met all those needs for me and resonated so beautifully with me.
In an interview with Neil Mitchell, just when you were announced, he asked what you wanted to achieve in your 5-year appointment. You're nearly halfway through that. Are you on the track to achieving the goals that you're after?
You know, I think the difficulty for me is the more I see, the more I want to achieve. And I know that I'm not going to be able to achieve everything. But certainly if I can make some small contribution to a more cohesive and harmonious Victoria, that would give me a great deal of pleasure to see. And if I can make sure that more people are opened up to the role of the governor and are made to feel welcome, particularly those who sometimes haven't been given that sense, then I think that would be an accomplishment as well. But you'd be surprised by some of the other things that have been opened up to me since that time, speaking to Neil Mitchell. And, for example, I've developed a real interest in the teaching of science. Now, that comes from someone with a humanities background. Because I know how important it is for the future of Victoria, that something like 75% of jobs in the future will require some sort of STEM skill, you know, either science, technology, engineering or maths. And if we are to keep up and to flourish in a global economy, we need more people studying science and we need more women studying science. So there are areas like that that have now been opened to me, which is why I say whatever my aspirations are, they just keep expanding.
It really resonated with me that you wanted to connect to as many Victorians as you could and that Government House was the house of the people. And not everyone could make it to that event, but thank you for coming in here because that's what I wanted to do is extend the opportunity for people to get to know you. It is a role that tends to be clouded in pomp and ceremony and protocol. How do you cope with that when you want to be the governor for all people?
Look, I think it's a balance, and I think it's a balance between the traditional aspects of the role that matter to ensure that it is a special role and that I can fulfil the responsibilities that come with that. I simply don't believe in pomp and ceremony for the sake of it. So when it's not necessary, that's when I'm happy to relax the protocols.
Are there things that are tangible outcomes that you're able to celebrate, that you know that you've been a pivotal part of being able to help make happen?
I'd always prefer other people talk about that. But if I tell you of a pet project that we're very proud of, my husband and I have been involved in creating a peace and prosperity garden. We've called it at Government House, a kitchen garden. But it's not a garden for the sake of the garden. It's a garden for the sake of running programs there. And we've partnered with the wonderful Scanlon Foundation, who are bringing women in who are otherwise either newly arrived in Victoria or they've been here for some time, but they're a little bit disconnected. Often their husbands will go out to work, the children will go to school, and the women just haven't been able to make the connections that the rest of the family have made.
They must be hard to get to.
Well, they're not hard to get to because of the partnership with the Scanlon Foundation. Right. They actually have hubs around the city, and they have terrific programs in place, and we've really just hopped on board with them. So we're very proud of that space. We're proud of what's happening there. In addition, we have all the major university design schools. We have their students designing the entrance to the garden and shaded areas in the garden. And then we're going to let some of the top students present to us and we'll see if we can incorporate some of their designs. And design is a very important industry for Victoria, so that's a terrific opportunity for these youngsters. And I want to see young kids from maybe some of the special schools coming in and making scarecrows, for example, for the garden. Again, just new and different ways to have more people participating there.
Now, your role is a politically appointed one, but not a position of political commentary. So I'm not quite sure whether you can talk about football, because I know you had to forego your love of the Essendon Football Club, or at least technically. The AFL has played a pivotal role in the likes of the women's game now. We've seen what they've done with the Indigenous round. It's a pet project of mine to get them to acknowledge the LGBTI community and to really acknowledge homophobia within that sport. Can you comment on what your thoughts are regarding AFL being the game for all people?
I love the way you acknowledge that this is not a political role, and you're absolutely accurate about that. It's a totally apolitical role, but I enjoyed the fact you then said, so you probably can't talk about football. So you've put football exactly where it should be, right at the top. It's a big political issue. Look, there's a lot I can comment on with football. Let me just explain why I love it so much.
Sure,
because many of my friends when I was involved on the commission couldn't understand why someone they saw as the way they perceived it quite sensible would spend so much time being involved in football. I think football is the most wonderful vehicle to have discussions that are too hard to be had in other ways.
Right.
And that's it might be drugs, it might be violence to women, and it might be homophobia. So my view on all those issues is that the AFL can foster discussions. When it comes to a player coming out as homosexual, I have the strong view that no one should be made to do that. We don't want a poster boy or a poster girl who's uncomfortable. What the AFL must do is create an environment that is safe enough and welcoming and open enough that people in their own time will come out. And I'll make the same comment to you as I did about being the first female governor. You would hope that for the first one or two or several, as difficult as it may be, that it would just become so natural and such a matter of course that thereafter it won't even be a matter of comment.
We agree on exactly that matter. That's a good thing. Now, the role has got another 3 years to go. What are you aiming to do and achieve in those 3 years?
Look, we've got so many different aspects to the role that we're striving towards at the moment. So I mentioned women and science. One of the things we have planned is a hackathon in the ballroom at Government House.
What on earth is that?
Well, you saw the ballroom being used for the wonderful Ida Hobbit reception, which was something that hadn't been done before. A hackathon is a problem-solving event for young people involved in science. And I want that ballroom full of youngsters solving all sorts of scientific problems as part of that promotion of science being fun and being a worthwhile career. We have the Red Cross coming in to do a blood donation day there, setting it up as a
in
Red Centre in the ballroom.
Wow.
Mind you, the Red Cross has been there before during World War II. They're actually there packing up parcels to send abroad.
It's a dispatch point.
Yes.
Wow.
Yes. But my husband is the patron of Red Cross, and this is his baby, his event, and he's very keen to have all the people from around that area coming to give blood donations on Red Cross Day.
What is Mr. Howard's role as your husband and in the role of your role as governor?
Look, he's an extraordinary support because he's involved in everything with me, but he also takes on some responsibilities of his own. For example, where he's the patron, and the governor's spouse has always been the patron of a number of different organisations. So Red Cross was a good example for him. And he is also helping me set up a school visiting program so that schools are going to start regularly visiting Government House. And he's leading the young people not only through the house to show them the beautiful house, but he's sitting and talking to them about the constitutional role and the role of the governor. And again, with his legal background and a background in mentoring young people, he's perfect for that.
On Saturday Magazine, we are speaking with the Governor of Victoria, Linda Desso, who recently had a reception for the LGBTI community, and it was in acknowledgement of Ida Hobbit Day. These community roles, I guess the core of the work that you do in the role of governor, they're very important to community organisations for either fundraising or acknowledgement and to get their message out. Is it the majority of your time doing this type of community work?
The community work is the majority of our time, but a great deal of it is really just thanking people.
Right.
And that might sound like nothing much.
No, it's pretty important.
I actually think it's really important.
Yeah.
There is so much good work that is done right across our state through every community by just good, everyday Victorian people. And how often does anyone stop just to say to them, we actually recognise the work you're doing and we think it's wonderful and thank you. So that is quite a large part of the role and a very, very satisfying part.
You have two sons that have studied law as well. Is law a little bit all-consuming at the Christmas dinner table?
No, because they studied law, but they've escaped.
Oh, have they?
So, yeah. So they're like many young people who undertake a degree, which causes great heartache to their parents while they live at home doing it, and then they don't practice in that area. And good luck to them. That's the way it should be. But there's a fair bit of debate on any topic, you can imagine.
What do you hope to do when you finish this role? What's next? Is it retirement, or will you go on to do something
else?
No,
I don't believe in retirement.
Yeah, I'm a bit like that too.
I look to role models like Dame Quentin Bryce, for example, and Dame Quentin is still doing a great deal of what she did as Governor-General.
It was very hard-working too.
Very hard-working, but she's still doing it. Mm. And when I look at her, I have great optimism about my future because the topics that are dear to me now have always been dear to me. Some I've added, as I've said to you, but they'll all be dear to me in the future too. So I don't plan on stopping.
Those 160-odd organisations that you're a patron of, do you inherit those as governor, or do you bring some on, let some go?
It's a combination. It's a combination of all those things, and that's wonderful. But there are so many organisations that I have some involvement with that I'm not the patron of anyway.
Okay.
So it's really not limited to that 160. It will depend at any given time what's happening.
It's a pretty thorough list.
It is a thorough list. But, you know, and so you might be shocked that there's so much more happening in Victoria as well, but there is. And, you know, some of them are wonderful. So the Women's Hospital, for example, I'm the patron. It's always been the governor's wife. But
right.
I was pretty confident I was the only governor who'd ever given birth to any children at the Royal Women's, so I kept that one for me, didn't give that patronage to my husband. And, for example, we did a wonderful event for them for their 160th anniversary. We had 160 babies in our ballroom.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, one of the sweetest events that we've held. It was lovely to look at all of you at the Ida Hobbit reception, but I don't know if you can compete with 160 adorable little babies who were reasonably disrespectful while I was speaking,
right.
I might say, but just gorgeous. So that's a typical example of something of which I'm the patron. Shortly, we're to welcome in a big event from the west of Melbourne involving Western Hospital and VU University, Western Chances and the Western Bulldogs. Now, I'm not the patron of those organisations, but that's a really worthy sort of evening that we're holding so that they get to know us better and we can have more and more contact with those organisations subsequently. So it's not all about patronages alone.
You were on a lot of boards prior to taking on this role. Do you have to relinquish those roles?
Yes.
You do?
Yes.
Right.
And that's quite reasonable because I have a new set of responsibilities now. But the beauty for me is that I can stay engaged across those areas and then, as you can see, keep adding to them.
And, of course, take on board a few more when you move on.
That's right. That's right.
Governor of Victoria, Linda Desso, thank you so much for joining us on Saturday Magazine and here at Joy 94.9. It's been great to get to know you a little better.
Thank you very much, and you do a great job here. Thank you.
Thanks for listening to a Joycast from Joy 94.9.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.